comedy coming up next, as Deliso Chaponda is back to tackle the big, controversial global issues. And then at 7, Jazza struggles to make sense of the world and Johnny puts his foot in it as we make a nightly trek to Ambridge for the Archers. First, though, let's turn our attention to next week when we continue our look at ways to deal with climate change.
39 ways to save the planet.
We all have to work together.
In the new series, Arnold Schwarzenegger shares his thoughts on tackling climate change.
It's a huge undertaking. Everyone has to participate in this, and then I think we can do it.
And we'll have more unique carbon-busting ideas.
This is the reservoir at Sheepens Farm with a 250-kilowatt solar panel system on it.
Floating solar power, super-efficient wind turbines, and carbon-free snacks.
This was net-zero supply chain produced.
The new series of 39 Ways to Save the Planet.
With me, Tom Heap.
And me, Dr. Tamsin Edwards. Next Monday to Friday lunchtime at 1:45 on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Now, the comedian Deliso Chaponda returns to Radio 4 with a new series in which he looks at divisive global issues and how we deal with them. Today, he's talking about blame. This is Deliso Chaponda, citizen of nowhere.
I think it is very natural to not realize you are a droplet in the ocean and just complain about all of these waves. Look at all these waves. You are part of the ocean. Hello, people. Thank you, every one of you, for being here. It's lovely to have human beings in front of me. We're going to start the show. There's going to be music. Music playing. Intro music, and then I'm introducing myself. Here we go. Welcome, citizen of nowhere, Deliso Chaponda! Thank you. Welcome to the show. You are listening to Citizen of Nowhere. This is the show which examines divisive global issues. And I am the perfect referee because I don't have a side, right? I grew up all over the world, knocking on every immigration office like Mary and Joseph. No room to let you in. And it is so good to be back, right? We had series one of Citizen of Nowhere in 2018, series two in 2019, and then we didn't in 2020 because, well, it was 2020, right? It was a horrible year. And it was horrible for almost all of us, right? Like, clap your hands, the essential workers. Clap the essential workers in the house. Good to have you here. What do you do?
I'm a teacher.
You're a teacher. Oh, these people. Now, I will say that this is the perfect time for teachers to renegotiate their salaries. Because people spent a year having to teach their dreadful kids. So right now, this is the moment when you say, you want to homeschool again? No, double our salaries. Now, what is interesting is, as much as everybody was having a bad year, I noticed that some people started blaming the actual year. Bloody 2020, as though it was the numbers, and they were like, it's because it's 20 followed by 20, and it's brought the bad luck. People get so angry. And I think, like, 2021 has been better. Am I asking? We feel it's been better. But I ask myself sometimes, has it really been better? Or is it just that 2020 was so bad that 2021 is like the decent boyfriend after the bad boyfriend? So the bar is low. Literally, all you need to do is like, oh, you put the toilet seat down. You're so lovely. So today's episode is about blame. Who do you blame when there's a terrible global event? Who do you blame for catastrophes in your life? And is there any value in blame itself? That's what we're talking about. Also, I'm going to have a guest on each episode. Now, series one and series two of Citizen of Nowhere had great ratings and reception. Now, if this series doesn't, I definitely need someone to blame. So I went to meet a good friend of mine, Tony Vino. He is a comedian and a Christian, so after I blame him for ruining the show, he'll just turn the other cheek.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
Hello, Delisa. This is great.
Hello, Tony Vita. How are you doing?
Great.
Great. It's great. Because the theme is blame, you might be thinking, why did you come to mind? It's partly because in a previous life, you studied law.
That's right. I studied law at Leeds University. So I did an undergraduate. And then I even did a master's in a thing called jurisprudence, which is legal philosophy. So from the Latin jurisprudentia, which means can make you entirely unemployable. So that's what I've done. So I did.
And what was your thesis? Because I seem to remember your thesis was to do with blame and punishment.
Well, yes. One of my theses, so I did two, but one of them was on retributive law, which is what we have in our current legal system, which is where you basically are blamed by the state. So if you do something wrong, you've essentially done it against the state. So a criminal case will be R versus Chaponda.
Wait, if I nick something,
yeah.
I've not nicked it from you.
No.
I've nicked it from the Queen.
Yeah, which is why, you know, we sing God Save the Queen, because the poor woman has, like, a crime committed against her every 13 seconds, right? So it's basically the actual wrong is not against a person, it's against the state, because you've broken the law of the land.
Oh, I see.
This is it.
You know, when I was thinking of the pandemic, I was thinking of, especially early on, we were trying to blame something for the pandemic. And whenever there's something huge which we don't understand, there's always trying to blame something.
Yeah, totally. It's choose your enemy. Like, people started to blame, just find anyone to blame. You know, we had
bats. 5G.
Pangolins. You know, like...
China.
Exactly.
The Illuminati.
And we just wanted someone to...
Choose your own conspiracy, basically.
Choose your own conspiracy. That's why I'm starting now to doubt whether, you know, like the Great Plague, I think we've just blamed it on rats. I don't think they were at all involved. I think they became like tiny scapegoats.
Exactly right. Exactly right. All around the world, there are all these theories. I'm sure you guys remember the 5G theory. A lot of people are saying it's because of 5G. It's because of 5G. Now, I'm not sure how a phone can create a virus. And at the beginning, I kind of believed it because I wasn't getting it. And I was like, oh, it's because I'm on O2 and it's a terrible network. So I'm protected. But also, I never understood it. But you know who I feel very sorry for is whoever's going to try and pitch 6G. The other one which was talked about a lot was bats. That it came from people in China eating bats. People like, look at them eating bats. It's so disgusting. And I was like, you cannot be British and judge anybody for eating bats. Like, if you have ever eaten anything from Greg's, you have not got a leg to stand on. At least in bat soup, you know what's in it. And also, the government started blaming us. Do you remember this? They started saying that people are dying because we've got an unhealthy population anyway. And they started trying to encourage us to lose weight. And they were saying that, oh, we're going to now have an obesity drive. And I was like, if you want us to lose weight, it should be an obesity walk, no? And there's no way that the government is going to make me lose weight just by talking to me. I'm lazy. You need to give me no choice. I actually think if you want the British people to lose weight, it just needs to be hidden everywhere. Like everything should just suddenly become heavier. Contact shoe manufacturers and just start putting weights into the soles of the shoes. In grocery stores, in front of all the chocolate, just put hurdles. Forget the congestion charge. You need to start introducing a digestion charge. And QAnon, the new age of conspiracies, blaming things for the coronavirus, blaming the vaccine. There's been so much of it going on. Cannibalistic Democrats to vampire pop stars to the government-created coronavirus. It's all QAnon. And do you remember they were storming the Capitol in America? A lot of them were QAnon followers. And they were being shot with tear gas. And the white lady audibly said, why are they shooting us? Why are they shooting at us? They're not meant to be shooting the Patriots. And I was like, you are storming a government building and you cannot understand that people are shooting at you. And a lot of people, when this were happening, were like, oh, black people would never have stormed the Capitol building. And I was like, no, we would have done it. Like, they're nutters in every community. The difference is, though, none of us would have been surprised when they started shooting at us. If anything, we would have been surprised. It was just tear gas. We're like, wow, it's my lucky day.
It's a human condition to blame.
We need to blame something, right?
Like you do that. You stand on a plug and you go, ah, and you go, who put that there? It's like society is a blame community. And when anything goes wrong, we want to find someone to blame. And we usually find some kind of minority.
Yes, of course.
Like we have the BAME community.
Yes.
Right, we're going to find someone to kind of say, this is the reason for our problems.
They just need to add Latinos in and then it'll be the BLAME community.
Yeah.
Perfect. People were trying to find something to blame. And inevitably, whenever anything terrible happens, there will be some fundamentalist Christians who find a way to blame homosexuals. It always happens. So there were some fundamentalist preachers saying, this has been sent by God because of the homosexuals. Just like, do you remember when there was flooding and there was this UKIP council who said, oh, the homosexuals have created this. And I actually think that it is time for homosexuals to start using this to their advantage. Just send them videos like, hey, you need to send us £1 million or we're going to make love. And Lord knows what God's going to do.
It's in our DNA. It goes back throughout human history. Like the Babylonians did it, the Greeks did it. There's a thing called like the scapegoat system, you know. So the scapegoat, it's actually a Jewish celebration called Yom Kippur. And from like the Old Testament, where they put all the sins of the nation, all the bad things, and put it on a poor goat, and then he'd get run out of town.
Well, I actually heard of an even crazier one where they threw the goat over the wall.
Crikey.
What did he do? And then they would fling the goat over the wall to take the sins with it. Like, not only are you going to kill me, but first I have to listen to all your boring stories. And it's a shame that the goat couldn't speak, because it could have, like, just said, I will tell everybody. They're not the only ones. So in ancient Greece, they had the pharmakos ritual. Again, if there was a lot of misfortune going on in society, they would choose the two ugliest people in town and they would beat them on the genitals and then chase them across town and then kill them. This is a really extreme version of Love Island. Now, I thought a lot about blame during the pandemic, but not blame for COVID. Rather, who was to blame for me being alone? Okay, because I was alone in lockdown. Clap your hands, anyone who was living alone during lockdown. Clap. Okay. Now that you know that I'm gonna talk to you, suddenly everyone's like, I was not alone. I had my imaginary friend.
Hello.
So you were alone during lockdown, right? And who are you next to now?
I'm next to my son.
You're next to your son. Why wasn't your son with you in lockdown?
His mom stole him.
His mom stole him? I feel like Jeremy Kyle right now, so I won't ask any follow-up questions. But how did you cope?
Biscuits.
Biscuits? Oh, a lot of biscuits, my friend. A lot of biscuits. Did you do the mental health walks?
I didn't do too much walking. I just ate biscuits.
You just sat home and ate biscuits. Absolutely fabulous. Thank you. You often hear people who are out with a friend, when people say, oh, are you two together? One of them will say, no, we're just friends. As though it is lesser to relationships, just friends. It doesn't make sense to me. I think it's the opposite. I have never taken a friend to court for custody of the Xbox. I think it should be like, this is my friend and this is just my wife. I was so lonely during lockdown. I would have hugged anybody. The longer it went, I could have run into Nigel Farage. I would have been like, come here. But you know, I had a lot of quiet moments to think. I had months and months of isolation to think about, why was I alone? I'm a relatively charming fellow. not hideous, right? And I thought of the arguments which I had at the end of my last relationships to give me some insight into why I was alone. And my last girlfriend, we always had these big arguments towards the end of our relationship. And she used to say, I miss the old Delisa. I miss the old you. And I was like, look, I've gained weight. I've got gray in my beard. Time happens. I can't rewind the clock. And she said, no, you idiot, I don't mean physically. I mean the way you used to treat me. You used to be so attentive, you used to be so considerate, you used to be so patient. I miss that, Deliso. And when she said that, I realized she didn't miss the old me. She missed the me I was pretending to be to get her home. I can't compete with that guy. He is a fictional character. And I also broke up with someone 2 weeks before the first lockdown. If I knew what was coming, I would have apologized. And we argued over this. She had a child who got in trouble at school for waving a knife around. She called me and she said, he's got in trouble for waving a knife around. He's jeopardizing his future. Could you please talk to him? He's never had a good, positive role model. You're in his life now. Could you please just talk to him? And I said, hell no, he's got a knife. You talk to him. And actually, the argument was about the joke, me doing that joke. She's probably listening to it on the radio now. Oh, he's still telling that bloody joke. And it's a funny joke, but it's not 18 months alone funny.
So in those cases, in retrospect, I am to blame for being alone.
Yeah, totally. I just think it's the only way to deal with blame is through forgiveness. It's like a big boil that needs bursting, you know.
Yes.
Because anyone that's been in a long-term relationship will know that without forgiveness,
yes,
it has no chance of carrying on. Because the longer you're with someone, the more they've annoyed you and the more you've done wrong and the more there's to blame.
So it's almost, I actually think, is I'm forgiving you today because you're going to have to forgive me in a week.
Yeah. I like it. That's like a kind of trading card approach to to relationships.
I actually think it would be great if you literally got like a token.
Oh, yeah.
And then next time they're angry with you, you're like, wait, I have a forgiveness token right over here.
That's brilliant. Because normally that, I've tried that for like my wife's birthday. I gave her like vouchers, you know, like, hey, a voucher, an hour of quality time. But I could basically say, here's a voucher for you to do something.
Wait, rewind. You gave your wife quality time with you voucher.
Oh, no.
As a gift.
Have I just... It was a rushed birthday present. It was either that or flowers from a petrol station.
You like, need forgiveness for this. She was expecting a spa day, and you're like, here's some time with me.
And when it comes to blame, religious people are the champions. Religious people are the absolute champions. So Saint Bernard, not the dog, the saint who the dogs are named after. So Saint Bernard at one point had a swarm of flies which were annoying him, and he excommunicated them. Which must mean flies are Catholics. Because you can only excommunicate another Catholic. Now, bees are Episcopalian, and elephants, of course, are Quakers.
Actually, we met because we are both religious, mm-hmm. and we met doing religious gigs.
That's right.
But it's also very interesting to look at the religious way of looking at blame and punishment.
Mm.
Because if you look through religious texts, there are two polar opposite things. One is forgiveness. Someone has done wrong, and so you forgive them.
Yeah.
And then the other one is someone has done wrong, and we bring down a mountain with lava and wipe out their society and punish them. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, are we forgiving? Or I just always think it's, you get very different ideas of how you're meant to deal with wrongdoers when it comes to faith.
Mm.
Another big one was blaming the devil. And what you might not even realize is this was a thing which wasn't always the case. Satan changed his role. So during the Middle Ages, Satan was not a key figure in Christianity. He was just another angel. He was actually comic relief. When they put on passion plays, Satan would just be like a little jokey character who would come on. And then during the witch trials, that's when blaming Satan and Satan is evil became a thing. So he went from comic relief to being like a main character. This gives me hope.
This is my time. He basically got knocked up to headline status.
Yes, he did.
Well, there was always the idea of like the trickster. And in like mythology, it was always like, you know, the devil within a mythological story would be the one that would be mischievous, but wouldn't necessarily be thoroughly evil and malevolent and the person to blame.
And often I found in the societies, when people said, the devil made me do it, you'd always be like, is the devil really interested in that? It's like, you know what I mean? Like, you got drunk and you urinated on your neighbor's flowers. And it's like, oh, I was possessed and the devil made me do it. And like, how does urinating on the flowers help the devil's plan for world domination?
Yeah. Lucifer on his throne going, ha ha ha, I never liked those pansies anyway.
They even had sin eaters. Now, sin eaters were paid professionals who in return for compensation would willingly absorb the sins of the recently deceased. So if your uncle died and your uncle was a horrible person but had a lot of money, you'd hire one of these people to absorb his sins so he can go to heaven. And they would sit next to the corpse and snack on food nearby, eating the sins. And I was trying to think, do the different sins taste differently? Like pride obviously is the best tasting. It has the most magnificent flavor of all time, right? Greed and gluttony are very addictive. You can't just have one. You just have to keep going. Envy tastes okay, but not as good as what the person next to you is eating. Sloth is undercooked. Lust is delectable. It just fills your tongue. And wrath tastes terrible! And the British also did a thing of passing on sins. They used to have whipping boys. The idea was that you can't punish the prince. So what they would have is they would have a friend of his who takes the punishment on his behalf. So when he's naughty, you whip his friend. This may seem rather barbaric, but I think this is a solution to a little problem you're dealing with in the UK. In the UK, it is not legal to beat your children. Beat their mate.
Do you think it works? This is the question. Do you think punishment works? So we found out who's to blame. We lock them up. When they come out, do you think they've been rehabilitated?
When I looked at all the stats and all the research,
yes,
there's a higher per person reoffending rate when people go through the prison system than if they go through an alternative system of either community service or, you know, mediation or restorative justice. And it kind of makes sense because it's essentially the naughty step approach to punishment. You say, right, you sit there and think about what you've done. But rather than going, oh, I have done wrong, they start then to blame. So rather than thinking about the victim that you've actually hurt, you then start going, well, the state has done me wrong. And they themselves become the victim because they're the victim of oppression from the state, or so they see it that way. There are exceptions.
This is true. I think the big problem is we always try to treat everybody like we're the same, right? So you can say generally going to prison makes people worse, but there are people who've become better human beings in prison, such as Malcolm X, such as Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
Nelson Mandela became a better person in prison. He even says in Long Walk to Freedom, he learned how to forgive in prison. It was that rage, that youthful rage, transformed while he was in prison.
Exactly. And this is the annoying thing and the wonderful thing about people is that we can't just reduce them into a calculus. We can actually decide to surprise ourselves and other people.
When you think of people we look up to, it's so hard to have people to look up to now because they keep finding out horrible things about the people we used to admire. I actually think Nelson Mandela is one of the last role models we have who we can look up to safely. And maybe it's because he was imprisoned for 27 years. So he wasn't able to do anything. Now, children need role models.
And people keep letting us down. So at this point, I actually think, because role models are so important, everybody with potential, everybody inspiring, should be locked up. Right? Like Greta Thunberg, get her now. Send her to a gulag while she's still pure and noble before she starts smoking natural, environmentally sourced weed and mushrooms and runs someone over with an electric car. When it comes to blame for big societal things, such as poverty in African nations, I know what's to blame. I don't know if you guys know what's to blame. We know it's because of colonialism. It's because of mismanagement, post-colonialism. It's because of infighting. It's because of the white man and the white woman. But as much as you can know, we don't have time travel. We can't go back in time and fix it. I'm not saying I won't bring it up as often as I can, but I'm aware it doesn't actually help the situation. We started on the premise that there's always been blame, and it's humanly natural to blame things. Mm. Do you think, Tony, that blame is valuable? Does it make you feel better? Is there a value in having blamed this thing?
Clearly, it's working to a degree for most people, because you do feel better, don't you?
You do feel better. You do feel better.
For a moment. I'm not sure long term you feel a lot better, but it's pain. We don't like pain. So, like, you know, we want to kind of get rid of our pain, so we put it on someone else.
I think blame is valuable if it's part of a process.
Mm.
So the end point isn't we blame things, it's that we blame things, and then the next question is, now what do we do about it?
I'd agree with that. Because people just go, I've blamed someone, and then that's the end of it.
Blame isn't enough.
Essentially, it needs to be the doorway into a solution.
You have to then do something.
I think if we approach it with moderation, so we don't just blame the government or one group or person, but actually we apportion it, take a little bit for yourself, and then accept your role within something.
Yes, I think it is very natural to not realize you are a droplet in the ocean, right? And just complain about all of these waves. Look at all these waves. You are part of the ocean. You are part of the problem.
This is it. Do you remember the petrol crisis, September 2021?
Yes.
There was no sort of shortage of petrol. People thought there was going to be, so they all started queuing up. And then people are sat in like their big Range Rovers with half a tank of petrol, queuing for an hour, waiting to fill it up, going, what? How could the government allow this? But it's because people all went and were part of the problem. But we don't like to accept that.
If you're in a traffic jam, you are the traffic jam yourself.
That's it. We look at it and go, look at all this traffic. We're actually sat in a car, not realizing that we're part of it.
Yes.
What is it to be human? We are. But traffic.
That's it. Blame is not constructive, right? It's something we all do, but it never actually fixes the situation. And there's only one exception to this. If any of you did not enjoy my jokes, that's your fault for having no sense of humor. Thank you very much.
Citizen of Nowhere was written and performed by Deliso Japonda, with additional material by Scott Bennett. Deliso's guest was Tony Vino. It was produced by Carl Cooper and was a BBC Studios production.
Thank you. Thank you.